Welcome to the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening this week. More Floridians have flood insurance than any other state residents. Almost 2 million flood insurance policies help protect almost $500 billion worth of property here in the Sunshine State. As the seas rise, Florida is most at risk. Within the next 30 years, the same time span for a normal home mortgage, 64,000 homes here are expected to experience regular flooding, according to a new report out this month from the Union of Concerned Scientists. One out of every six of those in Miami Beach. That puts the homeowner's investment at risk, certainly a potential financial disaster for any household, but it also threatens an important source of money for local governments, property taxes. Late last week, the federal government announced plans to redesign how it rates flood risk, and that could lead to higher flood insurance premiums. WLRN spoke with Roy Wright last week. Until the end of April, he was the chief executive of the National Flood Insurance Program at FEMA.
This is going to look at ways by which people are getting an appropriate price to the specific characteristics of their risk. Some people's prices will go up, some people's prices will go down. What will be true is that the price will better reflect the risk of that structure.
Better reflect the risk of that structure. Could that mean higher flood insurance premiums for your home, for your office, for your investment property that you may have? The Miami Herald, the Sun Sentinel, and the Palm Beach Post, with reporting from WLRN, have teamed up to address the threat of higher seas to South Florida. You can find all the coverage at theinvadingsea.com. And today on the Florida Roundup, another version of the invading sea, property values, paying for protection, and flood insurance. How concerned are you that sea level rise will reduce your property value? Albert Gomez is a member of the Miami Climate Alliance. He lives in North Coconut Grove, four blocks from Biscayne Bay.
About 4 years ago, they increased my premiums in my home based on the damages after Katrina and Wilma. Again, I still hold the homeowner's insurance, but I do not pay for flood and wind. Basically, my bill would exceed $10,000 right now if I decided to insure my home.
Have you made a?
And that's just not financially feasible.
Have you made a similar decision like Albert to forego flood insurance if you can? Maybe you can't under the terms of your mortgage. Are you ready to pay more for that flood insurance? This is where we'll begin this version of the Florida Roundup, the invading sea. 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. You can also tweet us in that conversation online, social media, at WLRN. Kate Stein, WLRN's environmental reporter, is with us this hour, as well as the three opinion page editors from the newspapers throughout South Florida, Nancy Ankrum with our partner, the Miami Herald, Rosemary O'Hara at the South Florida Sun Sentinel, and Rick Christie with the Palm Beach Post. Everybody, welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Kate, let's begin here. What can you tell us about this redesign of the flood insurance program that's going to take place?
Right. So I talked with Roy Wright, the former National Flood Insurance Program director. And basically, what we're looking at is a change in the way that the federal government assesses risk for homes, specifically flood risk. And in Southeast Florida, that means flood risk due to rising seas. And the concern among a lot of local officials here is that when FEMA starts including sea level rise into flood insurance risk assessments for houses, that means the cost of flood insurance is going to go up for people.
And what are the metrics they're going to be looking at for this redesign? All three of the major counties here in the last, I think, 10 years have gone through some kind of remapping for flood insurance, for flood zones. What's new with this redesign that it's going to launch, and when could it come into play?
Well, so we're thinking it's going to come into play in the next 2 to 3 years, by 2020 is what I've heard from sources in the insurance industry, different people there. Mm-hmm. And as far as what's going to be taken into account, it'll be sort of where your house is located more specifically than it has been in the past. I think that the metrics that they're using are a little bit better, a little bit more local. Mm-hmm. And then also they're going to look at any adaptations that you make to try to protect your property from sea level rise and from flood risk in general.
I want to talk about that. Nancy Ankrum, your thoughts here.
Right. This is long overdue. The flood map zones have been, I don't want to say wildly inaccurate, but they have been unreliable. And so this reform should bring us closer to the actual flood zones and what's at risk. Of course, that's going to change continuously as sea level rise continues to grow, too.
Rick Christie, Palm Beach County was the last of the three major counties here to undergo a renewal of its flood program or its flood maps just a few years ago. And there were a number of properties, especially to Nancy's point, a number of properties way off the coast out in western Palm Beach County that found themselves all of a sudden in a flood zone X, whereas the previous, which is indeed the insured area, which previously they weren't.
Yeah. I think that you're right. All the way out as far as Royal Palm Beach and Wellington, suddenly people were finding that they were that all of a sudden they were in flood zones that they weren't in before, and but this, as Nancy was saying, this this new risk assessment is long overdue. I think they they're still it still sounds like Congress is punting a little bit with the National Flood Insurance Program. I think they just extended it another 6 months because I think
That's
it
right.
was going to and everything, but they really need to go ahead and get this together and get it done.
You know, it was just a few years ago where Congress passed a law that was supposed to address the subsidization of flood insurance policies, meaning that folks were able to spend less on their flood insurance than if it was priced accurately. A lot of blowback, Rosemary, and that that eventually was reversed. But, you know, the flood insurance program, $26, $30 billion in debt, not because of Florida flooding.
Right.
Not because of Florida flooding, but Florida has 1.7 million pieces of property, million policies. Is Florida essentially going to be asked to pay the price of the flooding from elsewhere?
Yes, Florida has about a third of the policies that are in the federal program. But the big expenses most recently came from Katrina and Superstorm Sandy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those weren't primarily Florida losses. There were some losses, but not primarily. And yet people look at Florida and think you need to, you know, do your share. Well, we're already doing our share. When I heard that guy say some premiums might go up and some might go down, hold on to your wallets, folks. It's not going down. And when they do redo these maps, I mean, you know, the flood maps are overly broad. What they're trying to do is do new mapping that will reflect the elevation of specific properties. Yeah. But as this goes forward, you know, the big headline here is that flood insurance is about to escalate dramatically in the coming years. It's going to affect property values, and communities need to put in things that help prevent flooding, and property owners, individuals, we all need to be personally responsible for helping protect our own properties.
Well, we're certainly not helpless in all of this. There are things that communities can do, things that homeowners can do. And Kate Stein, I know you've got some of those. We'll get to those in a moment. Your phone calls, though, 800-743-9576. Rosemary O'Hara from the South Florida Sun Sentinel says, hold on to your wallets when it comes to flood insurance and the redesign that's going to happen over the next couple of years. Are you ready to pay more for flood insurance? Do you have a choice whether or not you can buy flood insurance for your home? 800-743-9576. You can also continue our conversation on Twitter at WLRN is our handle there. Let's begin in Coral Gables, where Greg has been patiently holding on. Go ahead, Greg. You're on the radio.
Hi. Thank you very much.
Nope, Greg, we lost you a little bit. You still with us? Well, we lost Greg. We'll have you call back if you can.
How about now?
There you go. Much better. Oh, go ahead.
Sorry about that. Headset not working. Apologize. Yeah, out of fear of really seeing a real estate crash, one thing my wife and I did is we mitigated our risk by selling our home, and we moved to a condo. Now, we still own property, and we happen to be at nosebleed elevation in Coral Gables, 12 feet. We're down here.
Careful, the air's thin up there at 12 feet.
Yeah, right. I'm losing my breath. But the reality is, you know, we're going to see things get ugly, and you know, I tell everybody constantly that before we see water in the streets, we're going to see real estate values plummet, and what's going to drive that is insurance is going to become unaffordable or unavailable. And I just think that not only do we need to right price insurance, we need to right price the risk of the source of the problem. And there's, of course, some of you who know the work that I do. It's about pricing carbon. I think that if we get the right price and we actually put more money into the pockets of citizens by returning the money to citizens, we make them better able to make moves rather than just have them be the victims of property loss and increasing prices. But the fact is, we need to take care of society. So if we can actually put the money back into the pockets of people, you know, Mayor Stoddard said it very well on the year.
Philip Stoddard, the mayor of South Miami.
South Miami mayor. Yeah, he said that, you know, the land over in Miami Beach generates a lot of dollars per square
yep.
per square mile. We don't have the money out west of Miami where we have inland flooding. The money simply isn't there to do all of these wonderful adaptation measures that everybody talks about.
Yeah.
Without the money, it doesn't happen.
Yeah, Greg, we appreciate the input there. A bit of a climate refugee there, selling a single family home in Coral Gables, Greg has, in part because of the climate risk. Kate Stein, your thoughts there.
Yeah, I mean, Greg makes a good point about the fact that this is probably not going to just impact individual homeowners and businesses. There's also a lot of concern that as flood insurance rates rise in Florida, that will send a signal to investors. You know, we have a lot of foreign investors, a lot of people who buy real estate from abroad here. And if our flood insurance rates go up and look like they're going to continue to go up as the seas continue to rise, that could, you know, be a sign that it's risky to invest in Southeast Florida and maybe people will stop investing. That's a concern that's on the minds of a lot of local officials right now.
Stop investing, Nancy, or still invest, but at a higher expected rate of return. With risk becomes reward. If you're going to take on more risk, maybe it's climate risk, you're going to expect a lot more coming from that investment.
Right. Absolutely. I think, though, it's also a time and a chance for municipalities and counties to actually learn the word no. And to look at how they're zoning development and look at where they're allowing high-rises and luxury townhomes to be built. At some point, doesn't it become ridiculous?
But Nancy, all of those luxury apartments or even non-luxury apartments represent new tax revenue.
They absolutely do. But
for the next fiscal year when they're sold.
But to what end?
Yeah.
They are not looking long-term. I think that there is a sense that, well, we won't be here. We won't be here.
Talking about the Invading Sea and the invadingsea.com with all the editorial coverage and news coverage with our partners, the Miami Herald, the Sun Sentinel, and the Palm Beach Post, here with reporting from WLRN. Your phone calls, your input as well, 800-743-9576. Picking apart a little bit of the flood risk right now and the cost of insuring against flood risk, but also the economic factors that are in play when it comes to one of the most important industries in South Florida, and that, of course, is real estate. Miami Beach is up next. Roger, go ahead. You're on the radio. Your thoughts.
Yes, I have a single-family home in Miami Beach. I'm in a single-family neighborhood. The city projects that they will be raising my street within the next 4 to 5 years. Suppose after that happens, the neighbors on either side of me sell their homes to developers who raise the land and then put on a new house, and the neighbor behind me does the same thing, and lo and behold, I'm living in a pit. I've done nothing wrong, but every time it rains, my property floods.
Yeah.
I've asked this question to various officials when we've had neighborhood meetings, and I have never seen an answer to my predicament, which will also be the predicament of many other people. What happens? What can I do?
What happens, Roger? It's not a race to the bottom. It's a race to the top for your neighbors trying to get higher than the next guy or gal, the next property owner, because water only runs in one direction, Nancy.
Absolutely. It is already a predicament for many business owners in the Sunset Harbor area of Miami Beach, where the streets were raised. And the businesses now, their entrances are below street level, and they flood in heavy rain. They flood in light rain. They flood in rain.
And they're considered basements, right, for insurance purposes. There was a problem with that. And so it makes it hard to recoup the costs if your quote unquote basement is flooding, you know, that's not insured in the same way as it would be if it were a first story house. But I think that Roger from Miami Beach, he makes a good point that there's a need for sort of holistic, you know, you got to look at the entire community. You can't just go piecewise, you know, house by house or neighborhood by neighborhood. As we think about how to adapt to sea level rise, we also need to, think in terms of the region. And some of that's happening already. We have the Southeast Florida Regional Climate Change Compact among Broward, Monroe, Palm Beach, and Miami-Dade. I was just at a meeting today where they're thinking, the officials involved in that are thinking about, you know, how do we adapt to these risks in a way that includes everyone? And how do we think about this in a way where we're not going to be disadvantaging other, you know, certain communities or certain areas just because we're not looking at this holistically? So that's encouraging, I think.
But back to that neighborhood level or even the single homeowner level, what are, Kate, some of those things that homeowners or condominium owners should be thinking about in terms of flood protection as this redesign of the National Flood Insurance Program goes through over the next 3 or 4 years?
Well, I think the most important thing is to just start out by being informed. You know what flood zone you're in, know the insurance requirements for your area, and then also know that there are things that you can do to reduce your risk and potentially reduce the cost of flood insurance to you and to your property. You know, if you think about something like installing flood panels or potentially elevating your house, that can reduce the cost of flood insurance, and it can make it less risky, and that'll be reflected in your property value potentially.
You know, all of that is good advice. There's a point, though, I have to say, I got to know what storm surge area I'm in. I got to know what evacuation zone I'm in. I got to know what flood zone I'm in. There's a real Rick and Rosemary. There's a real overwhelming aspect of all of this, and we've talked about this as a group, that the existential threat of sea level rise, Nancy, mm-hmm. to your point earlier, it's the other person's problem. It's not going to be my homeowner. Yeah, maybe I'll have a flood here and there, but it's the greater fool theory, Rick, that it's mm-hmm. the person I sell the property to. They'll have to deal with it, not me.
Right, and how long I'm gonna be in the house or whatever. But people need to start, are going to have to start looking at flood insurance the same way we look at wind. Hmm. Which we all were forced to do after Hurricane Andrew. Now we have to start looking at water because of sea level rise and flood in the same way, trying to mitigate these things by adding or doing whatever you need to do on your property or to your house. And honestly, if in terms of moving the needle on this thing regarding development and business, insurance is the first place to start. Because if businesses and developers can't get their property or get their stuff insured, then they make changes that need to be made because they will only listen so much to their local governments.
Yeah. So that's an interesting point, Rosemary, because it's not, you know, what Rick is talking about, it's not at a regulatory agency level per se. It's not at a elected official's office or a legislative body. You're talking about private industry, essentially, and that's what the flood insurance program, notwithstanding, is not private industry. It's a public insurance program, essentially. But you're talking about private industry, for-profit industry, putting a price on this, forcing action, forcing at least some kind of acceptance mm-hmm. and intervention.
Right. If we don't do something big to protect our community, those who are the bond rating agencies, who lend us money, who lend government money, are going to raise the cost of borrowing, and it's going to become even more expensive to try to fix the problems that we have. We have to think big about what it is we're looking at. While we do need to address what's happening in our individual properties, we need leaders, especially at the state and federal level, to pay attention to the problem so that while the people in South Florida are looking out for one another and making sure that what's done in Dade doesn't flood Broward or trickle up to Palm Beach. You know, at the Tallahassee level, it's not on the agenda. And that's really what we're trying to do. What the Invading Sea Project mm-hmm. is trying to do is get this on the agenda because it's not being talked about up there. You know, the incoming speaker of the Florida House, Jose Oliva, is from Miami. Mm-hmm. And it's not on his agenda. He wants to talk about hospitals and people hiding behind kids in the K-12 system. And you let us get sea level rise on the agenda. And to the first caller's point about taxing carbon, mm-hmm. we are deliberately not talking about climate change as the starting point in this conversation. Mm-hmm. Because when you talk about climate change, people line up on whether they believe it or whether they don't. Well, sea level rise is happening. Yeah. It is clear that the water gauge is going up. And so what are we going to do about that? Let's start there. And yeah, at some point we got to talk about how do we keep it from getting worse. But right now, let's talk about what are we going to do. And if raising roads means we're going to flood properties along the way, then we need to take a pause maybe on that. But, you know, flooded roads is part of the flood control system. Roads are deliberately lower than properties because that's where they're meant to, you know, where the water is meant to flow. But in the meantime, the groundwater beneath the road is rising.
It's so coming up as well.
There's less land to take the rain when it floods, and so the water stays at the surface. And we've got, if we do not think big about this, the markets are going to penalize us.
The financial markets. Yes.
Yeah. And it's, so we have got, and it's going to, if we do think big about it, our leaders can help keep our insurance costs in line because we get credit. There's this community rating thing where if you do big things, you get credit for, your community gets credit and your premiums will be lower. Well, what are the big things we're doing?
Well, here's the deal, Tom. The developer basically is going to build a 25-story tower, wants to build a 25-story tower on Flagler, which is right on the intercoastal in West Palm Beach.
Right.
Beautiful thing and all that. But nothing is going to make that developer think about the risk of sea level rise except whether or not that building can be insured. And if an insurer, if insurers say, hey, look, it's beautiful and everything, but in 10, 15 years, this thing, the parking lot that you have down there or the parking garage is going to be flooding, I'm not going to insure that, or your insurance rate is going to go up. That developer is going to think differently. Mm-hmm. And that's why I said I think it takes this first in terms of what we're talking about on the business side. It's going to take in the insurers or insurance basically to move that needle.
Nancy?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think to Rosemary's point about what are the big things we're doing, I think this is one of the results that we are seeing of, one, in Florida, term limits in the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
People think short term, lawmakers act short term, they get what they get, they protect their contributors, and then they move on. I think at the federal level, we are looking at this new administration that is not in line at all with protecting the environment and unfortunately is being allowed to march forward. And so it's going to be the task just got harder.
And here's one thing I'd like to see Tallahassee do, in addition to putting some money behind some of the projects that need to happen, like, you know, moving infrastructure and identifying what's the plan. We need to Tallahassee to address the building code. At local levels, people say, you know, well, the lower level no longer is going to have residential. We're going to put cars down there, and we're going to have the first floor of residential at the, you know, what is typically the second level. Well, that's being done on an individual basis. Florida, after Hurricane Andrew, created building codes that really we should be very proud of and have really helped make us resilient against wind. We have not done the same. It's Tallahassee that controls the building code, not the local governments. We need Tallahassee to address the building code to deal with flood. But they don't want to deal with it. We can't even get them. After Superstorm Sandy wiped out A1A in Fort Lauderdale, the state wouldn't agree to raise the height of the road. Mm-hmm. And so that fell to the city. We have got to get Tallahassee to recognize the water is here, the water is coming. If they don't do something, the cost of our insurance is going up, our property values are going down, the tax rolls are going down, it's going to hurt our economy. And they've got to step up now. And so I would encourage everybody who's listening today to know who your state representative is, know who your state senator is, know what the people who are running for office in August, it's coming up in August, the ballots go out, absentee go out at the end of the month, and let them know we've got to deal with this. This isn't a future thing. Our insurance rates are about to go up soon, and they need to pay attention.
Yeah, maybe you've opened up that envelope in the past couple of weeks and seen that premium go up. What do you want to know about the folks running for office this election cycle, about sea level rise, about flood insurance, about property insurance rates, about what local governments and county governments are doing. And how about you, homeowners? What are you doing yourselves to help mitigate and protect yourself against the threat of higher seas? Are you putting a for sale sign out in the front yard and or in the condominium window looking to get out of South Florida property before the water comes in? 800-743-9576. Phones are open right now. 800-743-WLRN at WLRN on Twitter. It's the Invading Sea Project here with the Miami Herald, the Sun Sentinel, the Palm Beach Post, and WLRN. Coming up, the threat of the invading sea to property values. That is next with your input. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening and supporting public radio. A normal home mortgage lasts 30 years. Within 30 years, thousands of homes in South Florida face the prospect of regularly flooding, washing away years of hard work and investment. A report released this month also predicts thousands of commercial properties are at risk within the same time span. Nicole Hernandez-Hammer is a researcher, climate activist, and South Florida native who consults with the group behind the report, the Union of Concerned Scientists.
Once the market better reflects the value by including the risk of sea level rise in those properties, then you're not going to be able to get the same level of tax revenues that you were before. And those are tax revenues that you would use for schools and for emergency services.
And for things like seawalls and pumps probably too, right?
Exactly.
Nicole Hernandez-Hammer speaking with WLRN's Kate Stein here. Once the market better reflects the value, well, is it reflecting that value now? Are you a buyer, investor in South Florida property? Is the risk of water and sea level rise affecting the kinds of investments you're making, the kind of investments you're making in your own property? How concerned are you about your home or your investment in real estate? 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. You can also hold the conversation online on Twitter. Look for our handle at WLRN. The Miami Herald, the Sun Sentinel, the Palm Beach Post, with reporting from us here at WLRN. We've all teamed up to address the threat of higher seas to South Florida. You can find all the coverage at theinvadingsea.com. Kate Stein is still with us here. Kate, you spoke with Ms. Hammer, the consultant for the Union of Concerned Scientists, about this report. Florida was number one in the country in terms of the vulnerable properties at risk for property value in higher seas. New Jersey was right behind. Lots of difference, though. What struck you about the conversation you had with Nicole about what this report shows in terms of the vulnerabilities?
Well, I think her story is just really interesting. So she's a biologist by training. And the reason that she's now with the Union of Concerned Scientists is because she's a South Florida native. And she worked for a long time doing research down here, looking at sea level rise, among other things. And so she'd be in like the Shorecrest neighborhood, mm-hmm. Which is pretty vulnerable. You know, we see flooding there during king tides. And she was out there talking with residents, and she would, you know, people would be there standing in sometimes two feet of water talking with her. And she just had this sort of experience where it was like, you know, I can't sit to the side anymore and just do research on this. It's time for activism. And so that's why, you know, she's taken it upon herself to get educated about not just the science of sea level rise, but also the economic impacts. And one of her main concerns is that communities where there aren't so many resources to do things like, you know, build seawalls or install pumps, she's really worried that those communities are going to be hit really hard by sea level rise. And so that's sort of my big takeaway from that interview, was how it's become personal for her.
Yeah. Your calls, 800-743-9576. Has it become personal for you? Dan is has been listening in Key West, wants to get a bit of clarification for us regarding flood panels. Dan, you're on the radio. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I've been listening for a bit. I'm a retired architect and also was a developer, so I was really interested in what you're talking about.
Help us out then.
In Key West, we had a flood in 05 during Wilma, and I had about a foot of water in my house. Afterwards, my wife got on the FEMA website, went through a lot of pages. We found a diagram for flood panels. We had a young man here make them and put them on the house whenever we're going to have a hurricane. Mm-hmm. But we found out that residents don't qualify for insurance reductions if you have flood panels. Only commercial property.
So it did not affect your flood insurance premium on your home?
No, but it affects my peace of mind.
Do they work?
Well, yes. We haven't had a flood since.
Yeah.
But we tested them inside of a concrete block storage building. We lined it with rubber, and then we put the flood panel on the inside, raised the water to about 2.5 feet, and they held.
And it held. Dan, sounds like you're quite the resident scientist as well, in addition to being a retired architect and developer. Thanks for sharing.
One other thing you may mention is that if people have sewage in their house, you can actually put a backflow preventer on your sewer line,
right,
which keeps flood water from coming in through your sewer and forcing sewage into your house.
Okay. Yeah, it locks it up for those homes that do not have septic but are hooked up to a municipal sewer system.
Right. A lot of people in Key West had sewage in their house, and so they had to rip out all their sheetrock.
Yeah, but you,
I did not.
You
so
make
I
it
was okay.
Dan, you make an interesting. Thanks for calling and sharing your experience. You make an interesting point regarding incentives. That if what Dan is saying is accurate, that the flood panel mitigation to protect your home, you're not incentivized in terms of being able to save ultimately on your you'll save your home, and you won't have any flood damage maybe, but you're not going to save on your premium. Nancy.
And that's ridiculous. He had to take it upon himself. His incentive was a foot of water in his living room.
Yeah.
We already have programs that incentivize homeowners to put in storm impact windows. Mm-hmm. There are programs that incentivize people to install solar panels. Mm-hmm. Why are we not incentivizing people and helping them pay for flood mitigation measures on their home? These are the payments are added to your, I think they're added to your property taxes or perhaps your mortgage. I cannot remember.
It is your tax.
And you get to pay this over time.
Over a period of time.
Over
right.
a period of time. And so it makes it very attractive. It makes it much more affordable. And your house is fortified. And with storm impact windows, you get
the credit. Considerable savings on
Absolutely.
Windstorm insurance. Yeah. The disincentive of the climate risk for future investment that we were talking about in the previous segment, it works just the reverse for the positive incentive to make the kind of mitigations and adaptations to protect against future damage. We've seen that very successful, Rosemary, to your earlier point, when it comes to windstorm after Hurricane Andrew. Not only the building codes, but the insurance industry responded with significant incentives if homes were built in such a way,
right.
if they had reinforced garage doors, if
right.
you have storm shutters, if you have reinforced windows, whatever those kinds of things may be.
Right. Yeah. No, there are insurance. You get reductions in your premiums if you harden your home. In Tallahassee, there used to be incentives for if you put solar on your rooftop, mm-hmm. but those went away. But there was this program, there is this program called PACE, that mm-hmm. if you put solar panels on your roof and it costs whatever it costs, the costs are coming down, but say $10,000, $12,000, I don't know, $20,000, you can put the cost of paying for that every year is sort of amortized into your tax bill, but it only works the legislature hasn't applied that to flood hardening your home against flood because they say, well, the cost you save in energy and electricity will mitigate the cost increase in your taxes that year.
Mm.
Right now, we can't say that the cost of adding that to your property tax bill every year will save that on your flood insurance. Well, it's coming.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. it's not long. And we need to be proactive in creating ways that encourage people to harden their property because government cannot do it all. And that includes seawalls, too, by the way.
800-743-9576 from the Keys to the Trees in Palm Beach. 800-743-WLRN, our telephone number. The Invading Sea with our panel of the opinion page editors from the Sun Sentinel, the Palm Beach Post, and the Miami Herald, along with Kate Stein, WLRN's environmental reporter. Your phone calls again, 800-743-9576. We'll go to South Dade, Palmetto Bay. Alex has been patient. Alex, you're on the radio.
Yeah, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Listen, a question I had, and it's a question my wife and I always debate is, you know, the timing of possibly selling your property due to the impact that sea level rise and will have on property prices. And obviously considering that, you know, it's these are 30-year notes, so when do banks start taking sea level rise into consideration when giving out these loans?
Alex, great question. And I can tell you that a number of the banks wind up, you know, making the mortgage and then selling that note to somebody else. Very few of those mortgages are necessarily still held on the balance sheet of banks. So some of those banks may not be incentivized to really be engaged when it comes to property values in those 30-year notes. It's the investors behind those securities that are packaged up without getting into too many financial engineering concepts and instruments. But Kate Stein, I think Alex's essential question is, when's a good time to sell a home if you're looking at these projections of rising seas?
Well, I'm not a real estate advisor, but I had an interesting conversation the other day with a man who lives in Coconut Grove, about three blocks from the water. And we talked about how his perception of his own home has changed just since Hurricane Irma last year, because he has a house that's worth over $1 million in a neighborhood where, because of the hurricane, storm surge and flooding, got to the point where it was 2 or 3 feet in his neighborhood, and it didn't actually get into his house, but it changed the way that he thinks about his property to the point where it used to be the place where he wanted to retire. And now it's the place where, you know, he's thinking he'll stick it out for a few more years, maybe, but then consider moving somewhere else, somewhere that's mm-hmm. got higher ground. And so I think it comes down to what's your tolerance for risk. And part of that is knowing what your risk is now and being aware of what the risk could potentially be if we do see 2 feet of sea level rise by 2060.
And those conversations are being had. And the question that accompanies those conversations of, I think I will sell, is, well, where can I afford to move next mm-hmm. if I want to stay in South Florida? Mm-hmm. This remains a very, very expensive place. Housing is out of reach even once you get a pretty good penny for your own home. So this ends up driving many people out of South Florida and out of the state.
We've been hearing a new term in that regard over the last few months, climate refugees. And some of those older neighborhoods in South Florida, Rick, are the neighborhoods that are at the highest elevation because they were settled first mm-hmm. way back when in the ancient times here in South Florida, the passes of ancient times in the 19th century. You know, and those are neighborhoods that could see some significant valuation increases at a time there could be real, you know, bidding wars and a real contest to continue to move higher.
Well, yeah, I think you're talking about a good amount of Palm Beach County when it comes to that because of the higher elevation.
Keep moving north.
Coral Ridge, yeah. Right. And yeah, you probably could see that. I think as sea level rise continues and accelerates, it likely will start pushing up the value of a lot of those properties. Like, and I know this is kind of crazy to think, but West Palm Beach versus Palm Beach, for example, you know, you could start seeing a lot of that already. I also wanted to comment on what you were talking about earlier in terms of from what the caller said when they called in, and that we may at some point be seeing the end of like a 30-year mortgage.
Yep.
You know, why even have one?
Right.
You know, and
right.
And I think investors and financial institutions are looking at that. Yeah. Will eventually be looking at that as well.
Yeah, and you know, what I would say in response to that, I've had a lot of folks in banking when I talk to them about just that issue. They'll say, mm-hmm. well, listen, the average mortgage is actually paid
seven,
off about
years.
7 or 8 years. Mm-hmm. So even though the borrowing's over 30 years, very yeah. few people go to year 30 mm-hmm. and close it out there. Kate Stein, you had some ideas about these cultural.
Yeah, I wanted to go back to
climate gentrification.
What you were talking yeah. about as far as climate refugees and where people are moving and where development is happening as we think about the future of South Florida and sea level rise. One thing that we're already starting to see in parts of Miami-Dade County in particular is gentrification in some of the lower income areas of the city, Liberty City and Little Haiti. Mm-hmm. And so developers are moving in and buying up properties there. And there's a lot of concern that that's because they see that those areas are higher elevation and they're buying people out. And so people who, you know, have their communities and their lives there in these traditionally black neighborhoods are being bought out by developers and kind of forced to relocate into other areas of South Florida that are more at risk. And so it's becoming an equity issue as well. It's not just, you know, something that we need to be thinking about in terms of the people in Palm Beach County who, you know, have a lot of money invested in properties there. It's also, yep. It impacts everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah. I mean, in land-constrained South Florida, they're not making any more of it, and we're squeezed between these two bodies of water, and they're rising on both sides and pushing people together. Kate, that's a great point. Let me bring in Cynthia in Hallandale. She's been patient on line one. Go ahead, Cynthia. You're on the radio.
Hi, I just wanted to comment on the programs that are there to help you to incentivize or, to, you know, impact windows, for example.
Great.
We went through this a couple of years ago. Those programs are very expensive. So when you do the numbers, when you run the numbers, it doubles the cost of brand new windows. So, I mean, that's the experience that we had. We looked at Y-Green, and by the time we ran the numbers, it was far more expensive to use that program than to just suck it up. And actually, we found a solution that worked for us over 2 years. But it was far more expensive in the long run than it was to just find a way to pay for the windows.
But at the end of the day, you did pay for the windows, and I imagine you saw a savings on the windstorm insurance?
And as a matter of fact, we saw a 50% savings on our insurance. Hmm.
Great. Cynthia.
Incredible. It was incredible.
Yeah. You kind of knock yourself. Why didn't I do this sooner, right?
Exactly.
All right. Yeah. Cynthia, thanks for sharing that experience. We appreciate it there in Hallandale Beach.
You got it.
We got more to come here on the Invading Sea version of the Florida Roundup. Stick with us. Where could all the money come from to confront the challenge of the Invading Sea? 800-743-9576 as the Roundup continues after this. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening and supporting WLRN. As the sea level rises, so does the price to protect and adapt to South Florida. The Miami Herald, the Sun Sentinel, the Palm Beach Post, with reporting from us here at WLRN, have all teamed up to address the threat of higher seas to South Florida. You can find all the coverage at theinvadingsea.com. The effort to incentivize, to protect, to adapt to the threat of higher seas. What about retreating and moving to higher ground? That's what we're talking about today on the Roundup. 800-743-9576. I want to go right back to the phones in Pompano Beach. Vicki is on the line. She is responding to an earlier call we just had about the incentives to replace storm windows. Vicki, you're on the radio. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Yes, I live in Pompano Beach in an older neighborhood in a home I purchased last year. My roof is about 40 years old, and I need to replace it. I'm actually using Y-Green to do that. They give you choices, 5, 10, 15, 20 years to pay it off, and it is attached to your tax bill. You don't pay a monthly payment like you would a car. And because it's attached to your tax bill, it is tax deductible. I chose 5 years, and yes, there's interest attached to it, but in the long run, it won't really cost me any more money to put the roof on than if I paid cash for it. It's a simple interest loan.
Yeah.
It's actually a lien against your home, and when I sell the home, it's actually taken care of at the closing table.
Mm. Gotcha.
It's a perfect way to fund it.
Vicki, a different experience there. Thanks for sharing it with us. We appreciate you calling into the Florida Roundup here. The economic incentives to protect against higher seas and frankly, the tough decisions that communities need to make in terms of paying for it. Rosemary O'Hara with the South Florida Sun Sentinel. We were talking about these climate refugees and Kate Stein making the point about some of these economically vulnerable neighborhoods are seeing developers come in and bid up properties and displace longtime residents. It is a difficult conversation to have, but some of our most desirable property is also our lowest line property that we have here in the region.
That's right. The face of South Florida is going to change. That is a reality. And I already hear people who I already know people who have left because they worry about their property value. I've had difficulty recruiting because people are concerned about sea level rise. But when Kate was telling the story about the Union for Concerned Scientists standing in 2 feet of water in a neighborhood where the neighbors are saying, what are we going to do about this? The reality is that nobody wants to talk about it is some of these neighborhoods, we have to let them go. We need it. We cannot, we are not going to be able to afford to protect every single property. And those that are most at risk are already revealing themselves. Mm-hmm. And if we do find a way as a community to agree that we're going to buy those people out, their culture, their neighborhood, their community is going to disappear. That property can then be used as a place perhaps to store water. Hmm. We need more places to store water. But so it's going to change for all of us. And the word retreat is one no one wants to use.
No, no.
But we do have to keep it in the back of our minds because it's coming.
Right, absolutely. To Kate's point about urban neighborhoods, African-American, mm-hmm. traditionally African-American neighborhoods, once developers buy these properties, if they are allowed to develop to the degree that they truly want to, we are then exacerbating the problem. We are paving over green space. We are taking single-family homes that have yards that perhaps can absorb water. And are we really going to put high-rises there or even just multi-level homes or multi-level condos there? This will only exacerbate the problem.
Rick Christie, we talk about repairing. We talk about responding to Rosemary's points and the challenge that Nancy brings up. We don't necessarily want to talk about retreating, but the science shows us that other communities have had to face this threat after the 1993 Mississippi flooding in the Midwest, for instance. I know of some a community in southern Illinois that it was a repetitive flood risk for years and years and years and years and years. And finally, the federal government and other agencies came together to essentially buy out an entire town and say, we're going to move it off of this delta because we're tired of continuing to have to respond and pay for the fixes and build the community up again after all these floods. Are we going to be facing the same kind of thing? And how does the community have those conversations?
Yeah, as Rosemary said, it's a very difficult conversation and something that most people don't want to talk about. But yes, we absolutely have to. We have to identify those areas, particularly, well, closer to the coast and closer to the water, that are most vulnerable and have the difficult conversation of buying them out and moving them. Or if we cannot protect them in some way. Yeah. And we will see some of that. Probably more so when there is a storm on the level of maybe a Katrina and what they did to the Ninth Ward of New Orleans.
Yeah.
You know,
let's hope it doesn't take something like that, though, for us to have that conversation.
Yeah, but we're kind of stubborn. And quite frankly, it may take something like that. I mean, that's one reason why we're here talking about
it. It took
this.
Andrew to get the building codes addressed.
You know,
so,
and we're kind of stubborn folks, you know. Developers love to develop. Governments love the taxes from that development. You know, we love living closer to the water and so on. So, I mean, we're actually kind of pushing against a cultural tide here to do what we're talking about. But yes, it does have to happen.
And this can't stay in the realm of somebody ought to do something anymore.
Yeah.
And to the point of moving communities, the radical things, this is where the leaders of the South Florida, the Climate Change Compact, really need to come forward and take the lead.
Rosemary?
And if we do something like prevent communities that have repetitive flood losses, the markets will notice that we are doing big things. The rest of us won't have our premiums go up as high.
No.
But again, listeners, pay attention, call, email, write your state lawmakers.
You can find all the coverage at theinvadingsea.com. It comes to us courtesy of the editorial page editors from the Palm Beach Post. Rick Christie is with us from the Sun Sentinel, Rosemary O'Hara, and Nancy Ankrum holds those duties at our partner, the Miami Herald. Kate Stein has been with us as well for the whole hour, WLRN's environmental reporter. Thanks, Kate. Thanks to all of you for joining
Happy
us on the roundup.
Yes,
so that'll do
you.
It for the program. And to hear who helps make our program possible each week, we turn to the most important player, you, the listeners.
This is Rachel O'Hara from Boynton Beach. The Florida Roundup is produced by Bridget O'Brien. WLRN's engagement producer is Katie Lepre. Teresa Frontado is WLRN's digital director. WLRN's news director is Terrence Shepard. Alicia Zuckerman is WLRN's editorial director. WLRN's program director is Peter J. Mertz. And today's technical supervisor is Jason Zabka.
Thank you very much. And I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for calling and listening.